Eternal life. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Life, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This week marks the 100th anniversary of the birth of Samuel Gompers, pioneer of the American labor movement, founder and first president of the American Federation of Labor. Our program today is The Education of a Labor Leader, a story of the youth of Samuel Gompers by Morton Wishengrad, and starring Ezra Stone as Gompers.
Wake up, children, wake up. It's morning.
You slept in the one room, all of you. Father and mother in the big bed with the curtain around it, and you and your brothers in the bunks your father had built.
Sam, Henry, Alexander, wake up, boys.
London. It was 1856. Your name was Samuel Gompers. You were 6 years old.
You're going to school today, Sam. Wash your face.
All your life, you would never forget this day. This was the day your education began.
He will be a good scholar, Mrs. Gompers.
Oh, then it'll be because you are a good teacher.
No, I know the name of Gompers. Here in London, it is the name of plain working people. But in Holland, it is the name of statesmen and rabbis.
Did you hear that, Sam? You must study hard.
Reading, writing, arithmetic, later a little history, a little geography, and then Talmud. Boy, do you know what Talmud is? Many books? No. Life. Talmud is the way of life. Look, I turn pages. See here? Whoever defers paying the wages of a hired laborer transgresses 5 commandments of the Torah.
That sounds a little difficult for a boy of 6.
Yes, it is. We will wait until he's at least 7. Goodbye, Mrs. Gompers. Sam, sit right here. You have much to learn, and there isn't much time.
You sat down and began to learn. You sat for such a little while, so brief a time, because one day when you were only 10 years and 3 months old, your mother came to school during the middle of the morning. You smiled at her. You were about to shout a greeting. And then it was in her face. You knew. The greeting shriveled in your mouth. And when you swallowed it down, it had the taste of ashes.
Mrs. Gompers, you can't take Sam out of school. Yes, sure, he plays like a boy. He's frivolous like a boy. But there are possibilities in him. Mrs. Gompers, extraordinary possibilities.
We have 6 children. My husband is only a cigar maker.
There must be some way. The mind of this boy must not be sacrificed.
We've tried every way. We can't borrow any more.
Mrs. Gompers, we are Jews. We must give our children an education.
No, he has to go to work. He must.
I myself will pay for his meals. He'll be no burden.
My husband has placed him to learn the trade of cigar maker. He will bring home 3 a week.
Mm-hmm. Take your book, Sam, and go home. Go earn your 3. Go. Get out of my sight.
He'll be angry with me, not with my son. It isn't
now,
his fault.
Mrs. Gompers, be still. Be good enough to be still. Shh. Silent.
I'm his mother. Don't you think I know what this means?
You don't know anything. They bring them to me. The mothers bringing the children with the scholars' faces, children with the honorable names of sages and Talmudists. And they take them away in a month, in a year, in 2 years. What kind of a world is it for children a place to work for 3 a week when they should be studying arithmetic or playing with toys? What kind of a world is it?
It was the real world. You were apprenticed to a cigar maker. The smell of tobacco was a smell you loved, and your fingers grew nimble. In a few weeks, you knew how to shave off what was unusable to a hair's breadth, how to roll the wrappers so as to cover any holes in the leaf, how to do the work swiftly, mechanically. That was the best part of the cigar maker's trade. The work went mechanically, and your mind was free to listen, to consider, to be instructed by the daily reading.
Who is the reader for today?
Each day, they chose someone to read aloud to the others.
It's Philip's turn, I believe.
And so today, Philip would read. At the end of the day, every worker would give a few cigars so that he would not be the loser for it. And being a boy and without much education, you listened attentively because the Philip of each day was your teacher.
Being the good Scotsman that I am, I open the Bible. There is a bad war in America, and here in England is much unemployment. But listen, instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree, and they shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat.
The education of Samuel Gompers, words you would never forget. In spite of the words, times did not get better. More men were in the streets, factories closing. When you were 13, a representative of the Cigar Makers Union came to your house.
Ma'am, I'd speak to your husband.
Oh, Mr. Gompers has gone out for a minute. Could you speak to me?
I could. Ma'am, there's less work each day.
Oh, we are aware of it. Too well.
And the little work there is, being good union men, we must divide.
I know that.
But you cannot divide nothing. And soon there may be nothing. The union provides unemployment benefits, sure, but that's a drain. So now, ma'am, we've organized an emigration fund. If you and your husband wish to emigrate to America, the union will give you £10 toward your passage. Think it over, ma'am.
What was there to think about? You have a choice. And so your father bought passage on a sailing vessel bound for New York. You were 13 and a half, but it was though America had always been your native land. You found work immediately, 6 days each week, 12 hours each day. But there was still time to light a firecracker when the 4th of July came round. You had fun. All your life you had a great capacity of laughter. But when the news was brought around that Abraham Lincoln lay dead of an assassin's bullet, the hot tears ran down your cheeks and wet the tobacco leaves, so that the cigars you made were spoiled. Part of your education. Growing up, your education. Joining a debating society, entering the Cigar Makers Union, making your influence felt among those twice and three times and four times your age. When the panic of 1873 came, you were 23 years old, and on this particular day, you were the one chosen to be the reader in the shop.
The young fawns are playing with the shadows. The young flowers are blowing toward the west. But the young, young children, oh, my brothers, they are weeping bitterly. They are weeping in the playtime of the others, in the country of the free.
Why are you stopping, Gompers?
The poem ends here.
I like Mrs. Browning. Read us some more.
No.
Your throat hurts?
Oh, it isn't that. We've had enough reading. We've done enough talking. While we read and talk and make conversation, oh, what's the use?
Something's troubling you.
Yeah.
We're cigar makers. We know how to listen.
It's hard to put into words. When I came to America, I thought, here it would all be different. Kids won't have to work. They'll all go to school. And there'll never be unemployment or depression.
That just shows how young you were. The system doesn't change. It's dog-eat-dog.
It doesn't have to be like that in America.
Yeah, you said that once.
I have a feeling about America. All things are possible here. Good things.
Gompers, grow up. Nothing ever changes. This is the way it's always going to be. Now pick up the book and read some poetry.
You picked up the book. You read the words aloud. But while the words were good, they didn't completely satisfy. The endless debating didn't satisfy. The intellectuals who staged the political demonstrations in Tompkins Square didn't satisfy. They were idolaters worshipping their own intolerant systems. They were mathematical about human beings. They applied their formulas to the human spirit, and somehow you hated that. Often at night, you heard them haranguing the crowds, and you had to argue back. You couldn't help yourself.
My friends, I say to you, there is no alternative to revolution.
That's right.
The system is corrupt.
Right.
We must destroy it, root and branch.
Mr. Speaker,
Is there an objection?
Yes, there is.
Ah, go soak your head.
No. Now let's hear the young man. Do you say, young man, that the system must be defended?
I say that it must be improved.
Impossible. Before you can build a new house, you must tear down the slum.
That's fine for houses, but you're dealing with human lives, not with building blocks.
Those who oppose us must be destroyed.
Mr. Speaker, you are confusing yourself with God.
We must train ourselves to be ruthless in order to achieve a better world.
Then you will train yourself to be a tyrant, and your better world will be a prison house.
He talks like a reformer.
Young man, how can you improve that which resists improvement?
We must build a trade union movement. We must fight for a fairer share of what we produce. That doesn't call for destruction. That calls for bargaining. We don't need a millennium. We need higher wages now. We need shorter hours now. We need to improve working conditions now so that a man...
Excuse me, we are talking about different things. I am talking about a great dream, about a vision. And you keep talking
about bread and butter.
A young man's eyes should be focused on the stars, not upon his dinner plate.
It's easier to look at stars when your stomach is full.
That's no good. We must learn from the beginning to take the long view, to see things in the long run.
But a worker gets his wages in the short run. He feeds his family in the short run. He enjoys an extra hour of leisure in the short run.
Right.
Mr. Speaker, we laugh in the short run. A finger bleeds in the short run. We rejoice and sorrow and live in the short run. In the long run, we all die.
They began to ask your name. They didn't agree with you, but there was respect in their voices. After this, you left the debaters to themselves, and you went back to the necessities of the moment. The necessity of the moment was to go to your employer and fight against the wage reduction.
You see that, Gompers? That's a wooden mold. Put a wrapper in it, put filler in the wrapper, roll it, and there's your cigar. A baby can do it. Now, look, this was made in one of these molds.
It's a cigar, but it isn't a very good one.
I can sell it, can't I? You get $2 less per thousand. Tell the shop, Gompers.
You know you're forcing them to strike, Mr. Stachel.
I've got to meet the competition of other manufacturers.
But we have to meet the competition of the price of meat and milk. Mr. Stachel, we barely get along on what we make now.
Gompers, my mind is closed.
You know, arbitrary government is bad government, Mr. Stachel. An arbitrary employer is a bad employer.
It's a free country. You're entitled to your opinion.
Mr. Stachel, I have a peculiar feeling that you want us to strike.
Gompers, how would you like to work for me?
Pretty good guess, wasn't it?
I'd be a fool to say so, and I didn't get where I am being a fool. Gompers, a young fellow with your brains can write his own ticket. You're on the wrong side of the fence.
Why do you want us to strike?
How would you like to join up with me, be my partner?
Why do you want us to strike, Mr. Stachel? Is it because you want to close down the factory? Is that it?
A smart fellow like you could be an asset to any business. Gompers, I'm making you a proposition.
Mr. Stachel, I'm asking you a question. You want this strike. You're provoking it. Why?
You know what a strike means, and the men know. Rent not paid, hungry children, evictions, days of weary, endless picketing, nights of sleeplessness. They know what a strike means, and you know. But now it is a question of your own self-respect.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I guess it's unanimous.
Collect your things, everybody. Let's go.
1 second, Henry.
What?
You'll be setting up a picket line.
Sure, just like we said. How else can you make sure that Stachel isn't going to bring strikebreakers in?
Suppose he doesn't bring strikebreakers in. Suppose he sends the work out to them.
Oh, that's too deep for me.
What do you mean, Gompers?
I'm not quite sure I know myself. All right, Henry. Set up your picket lines.
You won't stop following me, I'll call a policeman.
You've got cigars in that basket.
Well, what if I have?
You were given tobacco, and you were given molds by a man named Larza Hart. Hart got them from a man named Statue. You and your children made the cigars in your tenement.
It's none of your business.
But it is. Mr. Statchel's cigar makers are on strike. You are being employed to break that strike.
I know all about you people. You're dangerous agitators.
We're working people. We get hungry just the way you get hungry. We're fighting the only way we can to find a little dignity as human beings.
My kids are only babies. They worked hard all day and all night and all week making these cigars with me. We need the money.
We'll pay you for them. And we'll pay Mr. Statchel for the tobacco. He doesn't know it. But he degrades himself when he tries to beat us this way. Women and children and tenement sweatshops. He degrades himself.
Your education, learning the major lesson that the fight is not merely for bread and butter unionism, it must also be a fight for bread earned with dignity. The dignity not only of workers, but a fight to restore the dignity of children forced to labor. And not only the dignity of children, but the lost dignity of employers who degrade themselves by employing children. You realize this now. The fight is wide, and it goes deep, and it must become your whole life. The strike goes on. You hear voices rising against the strikers. There is the voice of Mr. Henry Ward Beecher.
Why are you striking? Is not a dollar a day enough to buy bread? Water costs nothing, and a man who cannot live on bread is not fit to live. A family may live, laugh, love, and be happy that eats bread in the morning with good water, and water and good bread at noon, and water and bread at night.
Mr. Beecher,
are you addressing me, sir?
I am, Mr. Beecher. My union has asked me to say to you that sometimes there can be no one more heartless than a good man.
The education of Samuel Gompers. There is so much you have learned. You learn that a strike is a failure of civilization, and that a good strike is a strike that is ended.
All right, Gompers, you win. This time, no reduction. Tell them they can come back.
There are no parades for this victory. You trudge in wearily and go back to the familiar bench. And now something happens, something that tests your capacity to lead.
Get out of this chair.
Mr. Statchel told me I could sit here.
Get out of that chair, Hart, before I break it against your head.
Easy, Henry.
Gompers, do you know who this man is? His name is Larza Hart. He's the man who's the chief strikebreaker for Statchel.
That's true, Hart, isn't it?
Statchel is a relative of my wife. I had to do it.
Get out of this shop, you scab.
Gompers, I had to do it. Tell him to leave me alone.
There, Henry, let him go.
There would never have been a strike if not for him.
Yes, but let him go.
I can't stand the sight of him.
Take your hands off him, Henry. Hart. You were a union man. How could you do it? Have you any idea of the suffering you helped prolong? You better go outside. We're going to have to vote on whether you can stay.
Gompers, there's nothing to vote on.
Right. I move here now that Larza Hart be expelled from the union.
Henry, if he's expelled, it means he can't work here.
That's how we want it.
It means he can't work in the entire industry.
Let's vote on it.
Someone has to speak for Larza Hart.
Not a union member. Let Statchel speak for him.
Let's vote, Gompers. Let's vote.
I have to speak for him. He has no one else.
He betrayed us, Gompers. He betrayed you.
And I despise him for it, Henry. He's the kind of man who will take advantage of any benefit won by United Action. But he's a human being. And therefore, I'm against his expulsion.
Why? For what reason?
It's a moral reason. I am opposed to capital punishment.
We're talking about expelling Larza Hart.
That's capital punishment, Henry. When you expel a man from a union, you are pronouncing a sentence of death against him. You are depriving him of his livelihood, his wife, his children. You are punishing them. We want to build this union of cigar makers,
We want to build a trade union movement in America. But we want to do it with morality and with justice. I despise Larza Hart. I loathe what he has done. But I will not deprive him of his livelihood. Hart, come in.
Stoppers, I want to thank you.
Save your thanks. I don't want them, Hart.
But I have to thank you. I'd like to shake your hand.
If you do, I'll hit you. It comes too easily, Hart. Much too easily. You're on probation. For one whole year, on probation. If you behave decently toward those who work with you, for 1 year, I'll shake your hand then.
All right, Compass. Thanks.
They sit alongside you in the shop. It is 1875, and no one knows that one day you will become the founder of the American Federation of Labor, its first president and its great organizer for nearly half a century. Except for a few terribly brief years in the schoolhouse of a London slum, you have received no formal schooling. But this is your training ground. Here in the cigar factory, poverty and unemployment have been your grammar school. A strike has been your college. And out of what you have learned, you write down in the notebooks you will keep all your life a few sentences for yourself.
I believe that restrictions dwarf personality. That largest usefulness comes through greatest personal freedom. Somehow, I have never been able to separate an act of worship or service, as I prefer to call it, from some concrete human need. Service has been to me the great spiritual purpose that illumines life.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take pleasure in presenting the Honorable Morris J. Tobin, the Secretary of Labor. Secretary Tobin.
Named after an Old Testament prophet, Sam Gompa's life followed in the prophetic tradition. Like the ancient prophets, Gompers was at once a product of and a voice crying out for amelioration of the poverty and economic distress into which he was born in London and spent his early life on the east side of New York. That this strong-willed emigrant boy was able to rise to the pinnacle of labor leadership and witness the attainment of a lasting labor organization can be attributed mainly to the American democratic climate he cherished so dearly. For it is our American democracy which has provided the opportunities for the men who labor in the cities and on the farms to organize to achieve the aspirations which further strengthen our American democracy. Sam Gompa's entire adult life was devoted to educating others, both within and without the labor movement, to the realization that trade unions were an integral part of our democracy. He expressed his view of the broad purposes of trade unionism before the AFL convention in 1889 as follows, and I quote, "The organized labor movement not only works for the material, moral, and political and social improvement of organized workers, but it is the lever by which these conditions for the unorganized are improved and constitutes the most important factor in ameliorating the conditions of the whole human family," end of quotation. Within the labor movement, he was constantly reminding unionists of their duties as well as their rights. He insisted on protecting the voluntarism within trade unions, which he identified with the democratic process. He stressed the origins of trade union organization with its voluntary coming together of unions with common needs and common aims. And he expressed it this way, that feeling of mutuality has been a stronger bond or union than could be welded by any autocratic authority, end of quote. He fought actively against the efforts of those radicals who might subvert this democratic foundation. Gompers' pure and simple unionism opposed the enshrinement of narrow self-interest and emphasized the gradual elevation in the social position of all workers. Convinced that our country would benefit by the raising of social and labor standards throughout the world, he pioneered in the organization of the International Labor Organization and was particularly concerned with the conditions of workers in Latin American countries. He set himself a Herculean task in attempting to educate those outside the labor movement. In a period when the open shop was mistakenly accepted in many quarters, as consistent with democratic tradition, he stressed that a man who must sell his labor upon such conditions as his employer may determine cannot by any form be regarded as either free or enjoying liberty. Like Abraham Lincoln, he sought to convince a public unfamiliar with the aims of trade unions that our democracy would be served best if the status of the laboring man were improved. Improvement in the status of the mass of industrial workers would inevitably stimulate national prosperity, give the worker an opportunity to become an effective citizen through the voluntary organization of trade unions, he argued, and you will strengthen the foundations of our democratic system. The social progress and legislative advances in America during the last half century bear out the Gompers' vision. Sam Gompers has left an indelible imprint on the American labor movement and on American democracy. Ours is a democratically conceived and directed trade union movement. It is conscious of its responsibilities in our society and is seeking to meet those responsibilities through effective action. It is actively engaged in fighting the activities of radicals who would subvert democracy. In the international sphere, the AFL and the Congress of Industrial Organization have joined the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions to advance the cause of democratic trade unionism. This is Sam Gompers' heritage to a democratic trade union movement and to a democratic America. All of us must join in protecting this heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Our Eternal Light drama today, The Education of a Labor Leader, was written by Morton Wishengrad and starred Ezra Stone as Gompers and was based in part on 70 Years of Life and Labor by Samuel Gompers. The music was composed and conducted by Morris Momorsky. Roger DeCoven was the narrator. The production was under the direction of Frank Papp. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.